is how it treats its women and girls. The smart, powerful, creative, accomplished young women.
We can fight.
I'm here because of you. I'm here because girls like you inspire me. Many of these girls have faced unthinkable obstacles just to attend school. Any society is how it treats its women and girls.
Won't stand still.
Your story is my story.
Clutch your pearls and hide your children. It's another episode of Surly Voices here on WMNF Tampa 88.5. My name is Liz. I'll be your host today. And if I'm very lucky, maybe one of my co-hosts, either Donna or Amina, will call in. If not, you're stuck with me, so deal with it. today, I want to talk about, on the first part of the show, I want to talk about what it means exactly to be pro-life. Because I see all these folks talking about, the life is precious and all this kind of stuff. And then at the same time, we've got so many mass shootings. It's not even funny. I mean, the United States is now appearing on other countries' warning websites telling people not to come to the U.S. because it's so dangerous here. And so you can look up how many mass shootings there have been this year alone, and we're only halfway through February. It's outrageous. And so where are all these pro-life people when we're looking at all these mass shootings and they're not doing anything to talk about gun violence, mass shootings, mental health, anything? And so how is there such a disconnect? Tell me what you think. You can give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text to 433-0885. And I'm looking at a website called gunviolencearchive.com, and it lists where all the different shootings have taken place, and it lists how many were killed and how many were injured, and it also has a link to the incident sources. And so it's not like somebody came and made this stuff up. It's actually documented. And then the Michigan shooting, of course, made the news earlier in the week, but there are shootings lots of different Texas, Pennsylvania, New York, Tennessee. And so how is it that there is this deluge of mass shootings? And why aren't the folks who proclaim to be pro-life, why aren't they doing anything to address that? And so it's really disturbing. And then our very own Attorney General Ashley Moody is filing lawsuits or joining lawsuits in other states to increase accessibility to guns. And why is the state of Florida becoming this stronghold of just nonsense and white supremacy and all these other horrible things? And why isn't anybody doing anything about it? It's really discouraging that we seem to have fallen into a period of apathy, just rolling over and letting them do whatever they are going to do. And by them, I mean the rubber stamping legislature that goes along with anything that Ron DeSantis wants, even if it's unfair to the citizenry, even if it harms their constituents. There's just no accountability for these things that are going on. And I'm wondering why. Why aren't pro-life people the first ones on the bandwagon to say, no, we are not going to give away guns like bubble gum in gun shows and stuff. We're going to have checks so that people can't get these unfettered access to guns. We are going to teach actual history in our schools. Because, yeah, the problem doesn't stop with guns. The problem goes on to everything. The problem goes on to expelling actual history classes from schools. And by that, I mean the DeSantis regime's concentration on ridding any kind of schools of any kind of thought about diversity, inclusion. If you're not white, you're not right, according to DeSantis's regime. So it's really disconcerting. I mean, you look at other countries like France, Poland, Brazil. When things are really just like at a boiling point with those countries, people take to the streets. I mean, just everywhere. There are hundreds of thousands of people in the streets protesting these things. And in the United States, that doesn't seem to be a thing. And that's another thing. I wonder why about that. Why aren't people all over the place protesting these horrible things? Got an email from Charles in Tampa. They are not pro-life. They are anti-choice, like everything in the right-wing echo chamber. The label pro-life is deliberately disingenuous propaganda. Absolutely. 100%, Charles. Playbook consists of being dishonest and confusing people to get them to ultimately vote against their own and all of our best interests. 100% co-signing that, Charles. Absolutely right. And that's the thing. This title that they have given themselves in, and I've said before, and I'll say again, Republicans have the best branding, bar none, compared with Democrats. I mean, Democrats are just so far behind on branding and selling their ideas. The right seems to have absolutely no problem doing it and doing it well. And that's one thing. They sold the American people, beginning with the passage of Roe v. Wade, they sold the American people this tag of pro-life. But no, it's never been about protecting quote-unquote unborn babies, because if they were that concerned about protecting babies and life, they would make sure that the children that they claim to be protecting and advocating for had food to eat once they were born and had health care. You don't see any of those things. Once that baby's born, they don't want anything to do with it. And God forbid the baby or the child's mother should access public assistance, because then you're mooching off the state. We want you to give birth to a baby that you're not prepared to take care of, but we're not going to help you once we have forced you to give birth to it. That's pretty much the idea. Let's talk to Fran in Largo. Hi, Fran.
Hi. Listen, I'll just make it quick. The best thing I heard this morning was on Amy Goodman, and she said the people in Pakistan are suffering so much that a group of them went and burnt down a bank. They burnt it down and just you know, just dwell on that for a minute. Okay, thank you for letting me make my little speech. Thank you.
Thank you, Fran. So, yeah, I mean, well, and God forbid you should burn a bank here. Man, you would be under the jail so fast it wouldn't even be funny. Let's see. Yeah. Somebody has sent me. Dave. Dave says they're pro-life up until the child is born, and then good luck. If they were pro-life, they would fully support Medicare for medical for all people, including women's health. Absolutely, Dave. That's absolutely right. Now we got DeAndre calling in. Hi, DeAndre.
Hey, good morning. I think how do I express this? So technologically, and well, let's put it like this. As far as for knowledge, we're at a critical point where, like, there could be an actual reversal of fortune. Like, people of color could take action and engage in a process of that because of this list of things that we're regularly being notified of as far as for, like, with Black history. Now, that's the thing. It's being subverted, like, incredibly. I mean, I don't even have to explain that. But as a rideshare driver, I encountered something that just kind of, like, I mean, eliminated my, like, collectability with others like myself, African-American. Uh-huh. DeSantis is engaged in this war against, like, ESG and diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Right.
And any corporations engaged in those sorts of practices here in Florida, you know, even if they're like a national, multinational, if they're engaged in that here in Florida, I guess they can be challenged by the governor somehow, some way. Well, I was offered on one rideshare platform to be a part of a Black circle of rideshare drivers. I really wanted to. Long story short, I finally was getting ready to apply. It was due by the 15th of this month, you know, the application.
Mm-hmm.
I went through my notification, started to apply. It slowly drifted away. And it was like, all of a sudden, it was no longer in my notification. And that was last week. And here we are. Well, yesterday was the 15th. I was stripped of that opportunity to use my voice to help myself, my community, and people in general. I'm not that selfish. You know, poverty all around us. And if I can explain, you know, what I'm aware of and how I feel, what directions we need to go in as a society, you know, I mean, I feel like I could be a help. But, like, I was stripped of that opportunity.
Right. And so, it's going to get to the point, Andre, where your kids don't learn anything in school about Black history. Not that they learn a whole lot about it now, but they're going to be forbidden to learn anything. I mean, it's really frightening to me that.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's terribly frightening. It makes me think that, you know, using their own game against them is possibly a way to go, you know, and hedging ourselves on people, quote unquote, on the left. I don't even believe in left and right anymore. I just believe in bigots and fascists versus these people, you know,
because,
I feel like,
yeah, if they're just sitting, if the left, quote unquote, left is sitting around letting the right get along, you know, do the stuff they do, they're complicit, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And every generation has arguable, like, offenses of terrorism that have been brought to us in the Black community. Here in the U.S., in every state, in pretty much every county per state. And so I can only remain hopeful. I'll just, you know, keep my list going, you know, and until I see actions, you know, helping to cross those things off. Just be hopeful and leave that list to the rest of the kids. And I'll do my part, most definitely. I mm-hmm. plan to speak out to that rideshare group and, you know, ask why was my voice taken away.
Right.
So, all right. Thank you.
Thank you, DeAndre. All right, Chris in Clearwater. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. I want to make it understood clear. You know, you can look up the NPR articles that refer to the recent history that shows that it's not black history that's being taken out of schools. It's that there was a pilot program for high school students that was issued by the College Board. It's called Advanced Placement. It's their registered trademark. That was refused, and it was scheduled to go into 60 unnamed schools across the country. If you divide 50 states by 60 schools, then at most Florida would have had 2 schools. And if you look at the objection that the Florida Department of Education stated, of course, it was their decision and not DeSantis's. DeSantis supported it, enforcing the Stop Woke Act, and folks want to change that, then they should contact their legislature. But they stated the things like Eduardo Bonilla Silva, who wrote that if you basically are participating in a society where there's systemic racism, that you cannot help but be racist. And I don't think children ought to be guilt-tripped when they're especially growing up and maybe a little covetous of other people's belongings, thinking that maybe they got them because they had some undue advantage. But I really think that the school books, they ought to teach, and I know they're not going to, so we have to teach our own history of our present enslavement to the Bankster gangsters. And that's the problem, is that, you know, if you get reparations that critical race theory calls for, then you're still, and we're also going to be even worse debt slaves, according to their computer entries. And so
death race? Sorry. And you said it sounded like death rays, but I'm sure I misheard.
I said Bankster gangsters, that we're still going to be debt slaves.
Okay. Death rays?
Debt slaves and even worse debt slaves until the Bankster gangsters, who are issuing our currency and credit at interest, the Federal Reserve, which is a privately held corporation, for instance, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, they're all our current slave masters, and that's our real struggle. So if I don't think it's appropriate to try to, you know, showing any care to try to guilt trip your fellow debt slaves when we're all struggling. And I think that if you want to reform, then community currencies, even if you want to self-segregate, time banks, barter networks, cooperatives, swap shops. And with those things, you can whip the money changers without having to wait for economic reform. So I think if, you know, you want to start your own community currency or...
Wait, we're getting way off topic, Chris, because...
Well, that's the main solution that I have.
Yeah. So how exactly is it guilt-tripping children to teach them that this country was built by colonizers using slave labor?
Well, they're certainly being taught that. If you read the syllabus, the 82-page syllabus, you can see some of the objections that the Florida Department of Education... Senator Manny Diaz on his Twitter feed even posted that it's not about teaching facts, it's about teaching guilt. I'm reading all these different authors of critical race theory, you look at Kimberly Crenshaw, who came out with it when she was interviewed by Joy Reid, who asked if it was Marxist. She never answered the question, but she said it's an interpretation, it's not a thing, it's a view of a thing, of an interpretation of a thing. So interpretation should be left to college, I think, if you're going to want it. But I don't think anyone should expect taxpayers to pay for critical race theory.
Nobody's trying to teach critical race theory in anything but maybe college or graduate school, though.
Well, they were trying to. The College Board was trying to. And they did issue the new curriculum February 1st, which I don't find any objection that the Department of Education has stated to it. So I remember 2 days ago that DeSantis said that they're considering going to, and I don't know if he has authority, but Department of Education maybe going away from the College Board for the college credits. You know, the high school students, so the audience knows these are credits that high school students can earn for college credits.
Right.
And it's not taking any kind of other African-American history. There's been no existing African-American history jeopardized. It was just this pilot program.
I think the folks that went up to Tallahassee to protest yesterday would beg to differ, but thank you for calling.
So read the syllabus, and no one has access to the curriculum itself, so I don't know how anyone can... I mean, I can't object to anything in the curriculum because I haven't seen it, but I think you should look at the syllabus at least and compare it to the objections of, you know, people saying that there was no objection stated. And just so you know, a couple of days ago, DeSantis had a press conference said that they're looking at going away from the College Board, going to IB International Baccalaureate and Cambridge for high school students to earn the college credits.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Chris.
So I have an African American history and new pilot programs. And, you know, like I said, it's only two schools here in Florida that might have been deprived.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye. Yeah. David in Sarasota. Hey, David.
Hi. So I was just listening, and I wanted to say that I think, you know, there's a recurring problem with bias in history, and I think that goes back, you know, as far back as Herodotus, right? So mm-hmm. history always has some bias in it, and I think the important thing is that we remove bias, right, that we try and be objective and factual. So should we teach that, you know, we basically traded rum and money to bring Africans to the United States, stacked high in a boat where they died and, you know, had to defecate on one another? Absolutely. The horrors of that should absolutely be taught. My only question, and I feel like for some reason I would probably maybe get heat for asking this question, but it's a completely honest question. At what point can we just call it history, right? I guess what I'm trying to say is, do the identity politics actually end up hurting the cause of, you know, enlightenment and being honest with one another, right? Like, honesty is really what we need in this world. There's people who warp these issues on both sides. You know, I mean, I've always been an independent. I'm absolutely no fan of anybody trying to censor anything. You know, but I believe that we have to meet each other honestly. And this is where I see really both sides distorting things. So it's a legitimate question, at least in my mind. You know, why don't we just call this history and teach what actually happened? I end up struggling with the thought that, you know, if it's Latino history, Black history, I mean, we're all human beings. And I wonder if, like, this obsession with identity politics, I don't know a better term for it, ultimately ends up hurting the cause of people just viewing each other fraternally as brothers. We're all in the same world together. We all get buried. You know, I mean, we're not going anywhere different. We're not taking our money with us either. You know, there's a lot of truths, but I just wonder, you know, if there's something to be said for, like, let's just call it history and back off the, you know, the identity part of it.
Well, and
is that fair? I don't know.
It's a good question, and it's a great way to open the dialogue. First, tell me how you define identity politics.
Well, I mean, I just see there's a lot of people who, it's almost like you want to make it like an issue right off the bat by defining it as, you know, it's Black history or...
Well, no, because it means different things to different people. And so unless I know what your definition is, I don't know how to address your questions. So if you can define for me what you believe is identifying as a Black American, is that in your mind identity politics or...
I mean, possibly. I mean, I don't... Why aren't you just an American, right? Why aren't we just... Why isn't it just human history, right? I don't know. I mean, I'm asking these questions completely out of honesty. Like,
I appreciate that.
I don't have a defined conclusion or opinion on this topic. I just wonder, like, does it end up actually hurting the cause of people being treated equally to define themselves as, you know, somehow different?
Right. It's a great question, and I do want to address it. Tell me first, where did you grow up?
In Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. Okay. When they were teaching you history in Rhode Island, what did they tell you was the cause of the Civil War?
You know, I don't know that it was ever really specifically addressed. And of course, there's so much like bias in American history. Like there's the traditional history that gets taught in the United States to school children is like called the Bancroft School of History, which was pretty much like self-aggrandizing America the Great, you know. Mm-hmm. If it mentioned like, you know, injustices done to Native Americans, it was just in passing. Same thing with slavery. And really, it's funny you ask where I come from, because Rhode Island, growing up there, you would have no idea that Rhode Island played an integral role in slavery. And mm-hmm. it absolutely did. It was pretty much one of the corners of the triangle trade. You had wealthy people that essentially were the money behind the building the boats and sending them to Africa to then provide the slave labor for, you know, initially a lot of it was for sugar plantations in the West Indies, and that was to make rum. So, I mean, you had this pretty abhorrent system of essentially money and alcohol in human beings. I mean, it really doesn't get much more deplorable than that. So you didn't hear about that growing up in our history classes. You know, should it be taught? Like I said at the very beginning, absolutely. There should be no bias. Everything should be taught. So, I mean, I'm all for that. But I guess I just wonder, like, the effort should be directed at, like, honest history as opposed to, you know, whatever particular ethnic group history, because it's human history.
And that's a fair point. But if you look at, for example, you grew up in Rhode Island, I'm sure the education system in Rhode Island is exponentially better than the education system in Louisiana, where I grew up. Unlike Rhode Island education that you had, we had a whole semester of Civil War history. And the reason for the Civil War was economics only. Slavery was, they taught us, affirmatively taught us, that the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery. And
that's bias and agenda, and it shouldn't be there.
Right. And so that's the problem, Dave, is because history belongs to the victors, because they write the history, until you get the losers who write whole semesters worth of propaganda to indoctrinate Southern children into believing that the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery. And so until we can make sure that the history the kids are learning is inclusive, because I didn't learn anything about Black people except maybe George Washington Carver and Harriet Tubman, you know, the big, you know, headline names. I didn't learn about women in history for a lot of, you know, really prominent women, you know, except for maybe Dolly Madison, because she saved George Washington's portrait out of the White House. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about is, yeah, let's teach real history, but let's start at a point where we can agree that everybody who made history is included in the curriculum. So I wish I had more time to spend, David, but the calls are stacking up on me.
Sure. Absolutely.
But thank you for listening, and thank you for asking great questions.
Have a nice day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, let's talk to Mike in Sarasota. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty well. One of the hosts on your show, I believe it was you, made the comment that CRT is not being taught in the elementary school system or the high school system.
Yes.
I'd like to clear that up with two points of fact.
Okay.
First, in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin won the governor's race, won the governorship of Virginia, largely over the issue of CRT concepts being taught in Virginia schools, public schools. Two, in Sarasota, we had a huge kerfuffle in early 2021 when it was revealed that the school board had was proposing to spend $115,000 for seven sessions that leave about $15,000 apiece to have a consultant come in, and he was teaching concepts, CRT concepts, such as that no Black person can be racist, and that all white people are inherently racist. And he was teaching that not to students, true, but he was teaching it to the teachers and all the teachers, not just social studies teachers or civics teachers, but it was going to math teachers, gym teachers, everybody else.
So where's your citation that CRT is being taught to students in Florida?
Well, see, this is even more insidious because when you teach all the teachers of these concepts and teach them that's how they should think, then it gets insinuated in lots of other different courses. It gets insinuated in economics, gets insinuated in history, gets insinuated in physical education, et cetera.
So do you think that a grown adult teacher who is not CRT inclined will be passing any kind of insidious thoughts on to their students?
Well, when it comes down with the mantle of legitimacy from the school system, and by the way, when the public and the parents found out about this course, they immediately got it canceled. So there was only one session was allowed. After the first session, there was such a howl, the whole thing was disallowed, and he lost the rest of his contract. He only got paid $15,000 for one 90-minute session. So, I do believe that if teachers are taught those concepts, then in probably 100 or maybe 1,000 little ways, they're going to pass those concepts on because they've been told that this is how they should think.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for calling, Mike.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, let's talk to Clay in Land O'Lakes. Hi, Clay.
Greetings. You're flying solo today, I see.
Yes.
Yeah, but you're doing a fine job, as usual.
Oh, thank you, Clay.
And suffering some of these people well, because some of them are suffrage. I won't go into naming anything.
Well, I like to figure out where people are coming from and where the thought process is that leads to whatever they're saying. So.
Yeah, let me put it this way, and then you almost hit on it. Well, you actually did in some ways. History, the word is his story. That's what history is, mm-hmm. His story. And as you pointed out, it's usually written by the victor. Actually, it's always written by the victor. And they always paint themselves in the best light, and they couldn't tell the truth if their tongues came out wrong. I mean, I learned this early on in grade school when they were teaching us about the American Indians, the indigenous folks, and they were just telling us all these silly stories that I knew were lies because I was fortunate enough to know Native Americans, indigenous people as I grew up as a young man. So I would challenge my teachers on the history they were teaching about it all the time. And they would go, well, I'm just teaching what's in the book. They know all the book wrong. So for people like some of your colleagues who have questioned history, you want to look at things like The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. I mean, that is actually a much more detailed account of what the actual history of America is than you're ever going to get in a history book or taught in a classroom.
Right.
I mean, that's it. And there are other things, like with people who don't understand this issue with Israel. The 100-Year War Against Palestine is an excellent book that gets you the true history of that whole thing. People have to look to find history because it's not taught in schools, and it should be taught, as we're pointing out here. But especially, I think that people need to understand how the wealth of America came to be on the backs of black slaves that were stolen from and sold into slavery from Africa. I mean, it's just an undeniable thing, and it has an effect to this very day because we have institutionalized racism because of it.
Right. Well, and going back even farther, I mean, the beginnings of this country are spilled with the blood of Native Americans.
Oh, yeah. You know, Thanksgiving is a perfect example. You know, everyone wants to celebrate Thanksgiving, but they don't really know what happened at Thanksgiving. And that was that a bunch of dumb white people, settlers here, which was a corporation, by the way, were all starving to death. And the Pequot Indians went and fed them, showed them how to take care of themselves, showed them where the food was, you know, did all of that. And then the next year, they're thinking, well, there's not enough to go around, and they went out and massacred them all.
Right.
I mean, the people that saved their lives and helped them out. I don't know. I'm a fan of history, but I don't like what I see in history because it shows that humanity is not very human.
Right. Thank you for calling, Clay.
All right. Peace be upon you. Give it the great work, and look forward to when you got the whole crew that's going to make us laugh.
Yes. It's hard to be funny with just one person.
and the subject matter, too, you know. And this whole idea about mass shootings, I don't know. I wonder what other countries think about us and our issues.
They think we're barbarians.
Yeah. They have to think we're barbarians. and the fact is, you know, I'd like you to do a show, too, on what... which one of these sheriffs or the sheriffs and law enforcement in the state of Florida are supporting this open carry or constitutional carry thing?
Yeah.
What ones are opposed to it? Because it's the most ridiculous thing in the world.
Right.
No, if you're a police officer that's responding in an open carry situation, everybody's got guns.
Right.
Who's the bad guy? Who do you shoot?
The black people. The black people, Clay. Spoiler alert, you shoot the black people.
Well,
that's how it works.
What if they're all white people? Still got to shoot somebody, right?
You might wound them. You're not going to kill them. Most of the time, you'll take them alive and take them to McDonald's on your way to jail.
Now you're being funny. That's good, though. And I
it actually happened in one case.
No,
so,
exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye. All right. New Mike in Sarasota. Hi, New Mike.
Hey, listen up. I love your show. I've never called because I'm at that age where I don't have to fight anything anymore. But I was the other Mike from Sarasota. I couldn't hold my peace.
He's giving Mikes in Sarasota a bad name, is what you're saying?
I'm saying there's a lot of good Mikes in Sarasota. Let's not muck it up now. And I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't want to use too much. I don't want to use any profanity over the air.
No, don't.
I appreciate your show's great work. I love Surly Voices. I was raised by a mother who was a single mother of five kids. And when I was a little boy, I used to be babysitted in the Buffalo Museum of Natural History. And then down the street was the Carnegie Library, where we'd also go and read books. And I read the little books from Bantam Books called Little Black Sambo and the Tiger Butter.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and these were the kind of things that were just normal stuff.
Right.
My mother and my big sister pointed out to me, that's not really true. And in my town, I had never seen a person that was not my color in my entire life. There was literally, in the entire county, two counties over, there was one black man who worked on the road crew, and every time they went out to patch potholes, it would cause a huge traffic jam. Because people would literally go by and gape at this poor old man as he's trying to do his job, and people would just look like they had seen somebody from Mars. And one day we were in a traffic jam, and I said, what's going on? And I was like 2 years old, 3 years old. Why are we stopped? Oh, because the black man's up here patching potholes.
Everybody's oh, my looking. Gosh.
And literally, there was like a parade. They went by this poor old
black man. And where did you grow up, Mike?
In upstate New York.
Wow.
Okay, so my grandparents pointed out to me, they said, you know, isn't that sad? And I said, I don't know, is it? When we moved to Florida, my mom explained to me how to say ma'am and that people would be different colors and things like that. And when I got off the train in Sarasota, back when there was a train station in downtown Sarasota, when we got off the train, I remember everyone was laughing at me because my eyes were so wide. I had this little red sport coat and a little rebel cap my mom had bought me at the train station where they still sold rebel battle caps.
Wow.
Well, every place that I looked, everyone was black. There was not a single white person, and that's why my eyes were so big. And my grandmother's best friends were black, but they were both albino. So I was a very confused kid because the first black couple I met had white skin and pink eyes. So I was very confused. So I went to my mother and I said, Mom, what's up with this? She says, none of it matters. She said, it's just the way God made us so we could appreciate each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised in a household that was completely non-racist. I mean, just completely. There was no such thing. And all of us kids turned out that way. And all of our kids and grandkids all believe that same thing, that it's all just a bunch of BS.
Right.
And it's people so afraid of the truth. I listen to Mike in Sarasota. I can hear the fear in his voice because he's reading off his script. And he's rehearsed this very carefully because he heard it at church. And he heard it now at the Baptist churches, they tell you how to vote and when to join the army.
Right.
Okay? And, okay. You know, anyway, I don't mean to ramble on. He got me wound up because there's so much good here. And everyone is so scared of the truth. And they're so scared of the truth. And they had these, like, every time you ask him a question, he did double speak. He never answered anything, never gave any kind of a straight answer. Just would skip around from subject to subject with all these cute little taglines that he heard on whatever radio show he's listening to. And I'm not hating the guy, okay? He seemed really well-intentioned and very earnest. But, Mike, if you're out there listening, brother, listen, don't be so scared of life. Go out and enjoy the sunshine. Smell some flowers. Do something for a stranger. You'll find out that the world isn't all wicked out to get you, brother. We're all here just living. We're all breathing the same air. Nobody's out to get you. Nobody's climbing over the walls from Mexico. None of the black people are born demons. They're all just people like you.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike from Sarasota. New Mike from Sarasota. Mike number two. Bye-bye.
That's me. Bye.
All right. Tommy in Tampa. Hi, Tom. Oop, there he went. I don't know. He had to have hung up because I did that just like I've done all the others. All right, so let me read some emails because they've been piling up here since Amina's not here with her glasses to read. All right. DeMarco says, we're going through this BS because one man doesn't want black history to be taught in Florida schools in order to further his own personal political career. Amen to that. Let's see, Jeff. Whew. Let's see. This is a long one. This is going to be very, very taxing on my non-eyeglass-enhanced eyes. All right. I think there's a definition of how the media views perspectives of left, and another definition of how the media views perspectives of the right. When a person completely embraces one side or the other, based on how the media defines it, there's a chance there can be hypocrisy. Absolutely. That's why I don't watch any kind of news coming out of the United States. I watch, I look at BBC and things like that. You were talking about pro-life, and probably that goes along with being pro-gun, maybe even pro-death penalty. I think you just have to speak to each person individually because each person might think completely individually. They might not completely embrace the ideas of what left thinking or right thinking is as defined by the media. Jeff, yeah, I do blame the media for a good bit of the disinformation or misinformation or just stirring people up for no good reason, you know? Let's see. Oh, well, it sells newspapers, so. All right. And DeMarco has sent a please talk now. Talk about now, please, people. Our governor is trying to cram revisionist history down our children's throats. That is the reason we're talking about black history. Amen. He's got a bunch of links here, too, so. What I'll do, DeMarco, is I'll copy those over so that I can play them. I can put them on the Surly Voices Facebook page. Let's see. There's good mics on both sides. I like that. Yeah. Let's see. This. Alex. Okay. Alex says, it's easy to speak without the lived experience, especially as a white male. They never stopped fighting the Civil War. When you listen to what they say, it's evident that it's one-sided history. The Christian history is steeped in violence, crusades. They will not renounce their guns. This is not everyone, but just read a book. Thank you, Alex. Absolutely, Alex. Now, Donna, my co-host, has joined us. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Liz.
How you doing?
I'm getting my hair done.
Oh, congratulations. I'm getting my toes done later.
I should join you.
Yeah, we can make a date. But we're talking about revisionist history. And, well, we started out talking about pro-life, and I don't know if you've been listening to the show while you're getting your hair done. Pro-life and how it's dichotomous with the mass shootings, it's turned into now talking about the revisionist history that DeSantis is trying to cram all down all our throats in Black History Month, especially. So I'm very glad that you were able to take a minute to call and give us your two cents. It's been an interesting conversation with some of the folks. And what is your take on all this?
Well, my concern as a black woman living in America, Florida specifically, mm-hmm. is that I'm thinking about all of the people who agree with it. That seems to be a bigger problem than one guy in Tallahassee that probably doesn't have any black friends.
Right.
Right? And so I don't think that we are considering the danger of this becoming popular opinion. If nobody agreed with this, it wouldn't be possible. And so I think that the folks who are outraged need to think about how much of the outrage of their fellows is performative. And how much of it is genuine outrage that will move people to action. When people are genuinely outraged, they act. When they're genuinely outraged, they vote like people that are outraged. I do not believe that the movement of a significant portion of our population is moving to stop this conversation.
And that's that's exactly what I started with. How are people not taken to the streets like they do in France?
French
do gangbang. Hey, watch. Watch the seven words. I was close.
Oh, no, I said gangbanging. Gangbanging is not one.
I know how it can go down here. Donna and I really have potty mouths. And so for me, I'm even worse than Donna. So for me to sit up here and not use one of the seven words, it's like, wow, you know, you would be amazed.
Possible.
Yeah.
So then my conversation is when the organizers that are supposed to organize, and I'm going to call people out, when the progressive coalitions, when the Democratic Party, the local DECs, when these people don't do their job, and, you know, and on, in their defense, I'll say this, they really can't do their job. The reason why is because when there's eight of the same people coming to every meeting, you know, 16 on a voting meeting.
Right.
That's a soiree. That's a club. That's not a functioning body of people that serve the general public. Right? Like-minded citizens. That's a club.
Right.
That's a group of friends that hang out with each other and have ideas. And that's as far as most of these groups can get. It's one of the reasons why the party statewide is so dysfunctional.
Well, and because you have people who call themselves Democrats, like Bob Buckhorn, who endorse the Hamburglar, Blake Casper, the McMillionaire, endorse him for the city council. Blake Casper is a Republican who has donated lots of money to Ron DeSantis and owns it and says, hey, you know, deal with it.
I remember when one of our state representatives, and I'm going to allow them to remain nameless today, only today, special day. One of our state representatives was in Democrat in Tampa, was in support of banning trans girls from playing in sports. I will name them at a later date once I have the documents in front of me.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Wow. So what's this? It seems kind of hopeless at this point because nobody's outraged enough to take to the street. Well, regular, you know, working people don't have the time. I mean, because in France, here's the difference. In France, they give you time. You know, you can't get fired. You can do what you want. In America, it's like they can fire you because they don't like the color of your shoes. In Florida, anyway, they can. So.
So let us remember the order of operations. The order of operations is we don't take to the street unless we've been aggrieved, right?
Right.
The way to avoid being aggrieved as a populace is that we actually have candidates. That's the first line of defense. We have candidates that don't support things that don't make sense, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because the people are too old to get with, you know, the modern conversation. I don't know if they're too churchified to be able to get with the progressive conversation. I don't know why this individual did that. But I will tell you that the first line of defense is effective organizing. If we organize effectively, if we turn out the vote, we outnumber Republicans. And still in Hillsborough County, even with the gerrymandering, even with all the things that have happened, we still outnumber them. So the question is to flip the NPAs and to turn out the vote. And nobody seems to be able to do that. And I can tell you that starting in 2016, I got here in 2014. I have run a lot of programs in Florida that have been successful, so I know it's possible. And I also know that we don't have enough people that are running successful programs. We have a lot of money that's being spent, but we do not have a lot of success. And that is because, and then the people get angry. They say, oh, the consultants are coming to town. Oh, the people are, they're bringing people from out of state. Well, look at yourselves, guys. Look at yourselves.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, Florida is going to be worthless to live in short order if it's not already. I mean, it's attracting the folks who are of DeSantis's ilk, who have fallen. I don't even know that he believes half the stuff he says, but he's Trump in a more acceptable rapper.
Right. He's younger. He's more attractive. He's more interesting a character. You know, he lends credibility to his nonsense and foolishness. And there are more people that can respect themselves and go along with it. Trump had gotten so far beyond the pale, it was embarrassing to be associated with. People were not telling the truth about supporting Trump from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right? They knew that it was bad. They knew it. And they wanted someone who would, you know, vote the right way with their taxes, who would lower their estate taxes so that when they had passed on their money, they wanted all of these things. And so they supported him, and they were horrified. A lot of people were horrified when Trump was showing his fanny. But you know what? They kept supporting him.
Yeah.
For their own personal interest.
Well, even when...
the other way.
Yeah. Even when he incited an insurrection, they were still supporting him.
So, I mean, there's two things happening here. You know, people who are otherwise decent humans are riding with this because they're self-interested. Unfortunately, that's the legacy of our nation, right?
Yep.
People turning the other way when the dispossessed and the marginalized are being abused, and Democrats do it too. Seminole Heights voted resoundingly for Jane Castor, giving no care to the development and the gentrification and the rising rents that would sweep all of our service workers out of the city, and we don't even have transportation to bust them back in when they move to the outskirts. Nobody was thinking of that. People were like, she won't hurt anything. You know, she's a Democrat, so let's just do it. So people, our history of not really being concerned for others' fortunes, combined with ineffective organizing, combined with the horrible slate of candidates that we have to always choose from, and you have to look no further than that display of pure nonsense in Tallahassee the other day, to see that there's no actual cohesive message, just rage at the governor with no plan.
Right.
That is what got us where we are. And it all just needs... These people are not, they're not great leaders.
Right. They like to think they're great leaders.
Yeah, I guess when you think about it, it's Florida. So, you know, I mean, the best that we can do, apparently.
Now, I can't blame poor leadership on Florida alone because it exists everywhere. But it certainly seems to be plentiful here.
Well, it has a chokehold on us. In a way that it doesn't seem to in a lot of other places. And places like New Orleans, I mean, I know these places are bad, right?
Yeah.
I know that there are places that are bad. The nepotism, the cronyism, you know, the way they allocate contracts. They've made movies about New York City is bad. There are lots of places that have these problems. But Florida always seems to make spectacle of it.
Right.
Always exceptional.
Well, speaking of nepotism... If Jane Castor has her way, her mother-in-law will be on the city council soon, so. But it's true, though. In New Orleans, you can't get anything done unless you're related to somebody or you know somebody. That's just how it works.
New York is close to that. I've watched the way the city council works in New York, and they're like a little country. There's 4 million people in Brooklyn. You can imagine the shenanigans they get up to.
Ooh, yeah. So we're winding down. Frank's giving me the finger, but thank you for calling in. And I'll text you and we'll see if we can get together this afternoon.
Thank you. Bye.
Awesome. Bye. Thank you for listening to Surly Voices on WMNF Tampa 88.5. Please stay tuned for True Talk. Diamonds.
I like stunning, I like shining, I like $1 million deals. Where's my pen? Bitch, I'm signing. I like those Balenciagas, the ones that look like socks. I like going to the jeweler, I put rocks all in my watch. I like texts from my exes when they wanna